Hello and welcome to Null Pointers. We're your hosts, Mark.
And Stephen.
And today we'll be talking about a lot of fun topics, but first let's get the intro music done. So, Stephen, before we get into serious topics, I don't know how it is at your household, but many years ago, I bought myself a NAS, like a network attached storage, so I could upload my movies that I legally bought and my photos and stuff like that.
Private podcast musings.
All that. Also, so you had like your own little server, and it was great. It mainly didn't do anything. So I think recently the main thing that is running on it is Home Assistant. Home Assistant is a really cool thing if you're into automating your home appliances, because it makes all these different standards and producers like seem to be working together with it more easy. It doesn't work for everything, but a lot of it is in there. Anyhow, so that was mainly on there. And now a few months ago, I really have started to look into these container things like Docker and stuff like that. And it turns out my NAS, which was a QNAP NAS, it's now many, many years old. I will not bother to put it into the show notes. And I know there's also Synology, and I think there are many great systems out there. So I'm not trying to tell you have to have a QNAP. But anyhow, you can run Docker containers on there, or also like entire container orchestration stuff and stuff like that, so you can have a lot of fun. So I started to get more into that because I'm just like playing around with it, and I think like home network is a great thing to do. So my short-term goal is like to have all my photographs that I'm now uploading to multiple clouds, so my iPhone doesn't explode, so I can have them like on my home NAS, so I don't have to pay any subscriptions to have it there. And now it just so happened that one of my hard disks failed, and I only have two hard disks. So, yeah. So it's like, you know, you got all these fun things that you can play around with in the virtualization world and everything, and then suddenly you get brought back, smacked down to reality. I have to replace my hard drive. I don't know. Do you have anything like that for wasting your time?
I have an NAS as well. It's a Synology DS 2011. Ooh. That might give a quick hint about when that was released.
Nope. let me guess.
So yeah, let me guess. It's been a hot minute. And actually, I sort of share your problem, I suppose, because I think it was somewhere last year where my RAID 0 setup said, well, you have two hard drives. One is now officially dead, so you're screwed. So yeah, I lost mostly stuff I didn't really care about anyway, because I'm not using it like a pro like you are.
So RAID 0 is when you get like the full capacity? So I only know there's like RAID 0.
RAID 0 is you have no backup.
No backup. So I'm running RAID 1, so it's like a one-to-one copy.
Yeah.
So right now the backup is restore. So I got my new hard disk today, I installed it, and it tells me now I have to wait 24 hours until my 2 terabytes stuff is organized. You know, there's like these shows that are really now popular on TV.
What is
Trash TV?
TV
shows, the Netflix series. Ah. I think there's actually even Netflix shows at this point of time where people, they got like so much clutter in their homes that people come by to declutter their homes and organize their books according to color and stuff like that. So anyhow, but I think my 2 terabytes, I don't know what everything is. I guess I have some movies on there. Having bought a drone a few years ago does not help reduce storage pressure. That's what's currently killing my iPhone, because my drone always syncs it first to my phone and then I somehow have to get rid of it. Anyhow, so I'm just, yeah, it's but I might have to do some cleansing, some dieting, some throwing stuff out. That being said, I just doubled my hard disk by getting a replacement because they're so cheap these days, so I might.
That's true.
I might just skip it and just reorganize it at some point. But yeah,
we'll speak again.
We'll speak again, but it's a fun hobby. Moving along, fun hobbies. I'm sure you have heard about it. So by the time this episode will be released, I think it will be like a week old, but OpenAI had some big announcements to be made. And so there's a new version of ChatGPT, ChatGPT 4.0.
Yep.
I had some time today to chat with it a bit. It's super fast. I noticed that. I also saw they made like a movie recording of doing like live translation. That was very cool. I don't know. Have you already played around with it, Stephen? What's your thoughts on this thing?
I've done a few quick ChatGPT queries, and I must admit it is a bit more, well, elaborate, I guess, is the word I'm experiencing. So I'm trying to set up a scoring system for something, and it's all sorts of different factors that aren't in the same format, so they're not all values between 0 and 99 or something simple like that. They're all different things, and I was looking for a way to sort of set that up. And I had asked it before, and it came up with, well, something, but it wasn't great. And this time I asked it again just to try, and it came up with like almost an entire essay on, hey, you could do this and then this, and then you normalize something here, and then you do this and this and this. So it was noticeably different at the very least. But I haven't yet used all those fancy features that I also saw people use, where you're filming stuff and it's telling you about it, and or you're actually having a sort of dialogue with it in different languages and all that kind of stuff, which I must admit, it's... Did you ever stumble upon like a YouTube video where it's narrated by an obvious AI voice? Like they're good, but they're not there yet. I feel like this one is really, really good.
Like the one that they're using. I haven't actually been dabbling with those, but yeah, I know what you mean. Like when someone says a word and it's like, yeah, that's not quite,
almost,
but yeah. Yeah, but I mean, generally speaking, I think you haven't got the subscription to ChatGPT. I've subscribed now since quite a while. I've been using it for planning my vacations and also a lot during work. There is a lot of half-truths that you sometimes get thrown at, or it will just tell you like, this is like this and that. And you're like, no, it's not. And the worst part is if you don't know it and you believe it, and then it's like, yeah. So like, some ChatGPT is like really great at sometimes transforming information. So if you got like data in one format and you want to have it in another, I can just throw it in there. And generally speaking, it will do a good job. And one of my coworkers, he just said like the thing that he said, like, for some reason, on line 32, ChatGPT thought it would be okay to add a character. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he accidentally stumbled onto the keyboard. I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me that ChatGPT sometimes just like does some oddball things. But yeah, generally speaking, I've been using it quite a lot, and I must say, like, this speeded up conversation, that looks very interesting, because I sometimes I use it like for brainstorming ideas, because you can like chat with it and you can go like, what would be a good idea to solve this and that, and then we'll come up with solutions, and you go like, oh, how is it this and that? Or could I do something like that and that? Or are there like any other options? And it's just like that chatting along helps me, and it doesn't bother anyone else at work, because it's just simply brainstorming. And I'd like to do brainstorming also with human beings, but some problems are very technical, and sometimes, yeah, it's quite a long way to then get someone to that point where you are. And this new super fast response thing, I'm looking forward to trying that out in the future days to come, because I think that could be quite a game changer. Because right now you like ask it a question and it goes like bloom, 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 and then the response comes, and it looks a lot more polished and a lot of other fun things. But I'm a developer, so it's cool that it can narrate a video and that it can do new things with images and stuff like that and translate into different language, but I don't use those on a daily basis. So yeah,
you wanted to code for you. That's basically it.
I think GitHub Copilot, and I got ChatGPT-4 since quite some time, and you can also do it there. I mean, you got like a chat window where you can ask it questions, what something is doing, and we have already talked about this, and
true.
It's helpful in my opinion. I wouldn't want to miss it anymore.
Just to elaborate a bit on that, keep this between the two of us, but I just asked it for $1 million idea, and we are making a smart health monitoring apparel thing.
Cool.
So like something like that.
You heard it here
just,
first.
You know.
Yeah. Don't as soon as we get around to
say it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
what
we'll
be doing. Just between the two of us. Okay. $1 million idea. Great. Might be true. I mean, yeah. But why not? I think health is a everlasting thing. Let's do that. Another thing that is around the corner and will be, I think, by the time this releases, it
might be past the corner.
Past the corner, or at least the major announcements will be out. Microsoft Build. It's next week, so it's on the 21st of May until the 23rd, mm-hmm. And. I have no idea what's coming, but I'm excited.
It's AI heavy. I can tell you that.
Yeah, yeah.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Microsoft has invested a lot of time. I just recently read an article, like alone in the German speaking space. They acquired a massive amount of customers, many of them new. And also, if you look at the partners, like if you go into the website, you can see like which partners are sponsored. And I think there are like two that haven't got the word AI mentioned in them, and all the others have AI in them. So, I mean, you got like some obvious heavy hitters like NVIDIA, which have, I mean, powered a lot of this AI revolution by providing the hardware. Other players are now jumping on to this to also give this boost to the AI research and usage. But I mean, yeah, I think there will be a lot of interesting Copilot announcements and whatnot coming along. Probably also one or two cloud announcements, how we can integrate these things into our own products. But if you look at the featured speakers, I mean, there are a lot of great sessions, I think, that we can look forward to. Fun sessions with some humor.
Yeah, and I also saw some sessions talking about Windows ARM, which I suppose there are rumors that they're releasing something new in that space, device-wise. Who knows? I don't really follow along with all the ARM stuff because, well, I'm still on my old little non-ARM Mackie. It'll live for a few more years, probably. But yeah, it's very AI heavy. I've been going through the sessions somewhere this afternoon, and it was like Copilot this, Copilot that, do some GPT here, do some AI there. It's going everywhere. Like Windows will, the next version of Windows undoubtedly will ship with all sorts of AI features. I don't doubt that. Helping you be even more productive, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, AI is a big thing. Security is another big one, or not another big one. So I can just see like there are a few sessions on security, but a lot of them are AI Copilot, how to integrate a Copilot, how to provide features that could be integrated into some Copilot. It sure looks interesting. I mean, it's not that much of a surprise if you look at the past announcements or past news cycles that came out, but I think there are some, I'm sure to note some of the sessions that are going on. Also note that not all the sessions will actually be recorded, so some of them you will have to watch live or they will be gone.
or will we pre-record it even as well? But yeah, there's even one, since we're both .NET MAUI geeks, there's even one combining .NET MAUI and GPT. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, seriously, GPT all the things.
It's not only GPT, Stephen. It's actually even a Blazor session. So .NET MAUI and Blazor, yeah, which is all the hotness right now.
It's all you'll ever need.
And some sessions on .NET 9, as I see. Yeah, I think it will be interesting. Maddie will have a session. She tweeted a while ago, Maddie Montekilo, one of the PMs of the .NET MAUI team, on more on the tooling side of Visual Studio. So I guess Visual Studio will also get some cool new features during build. There is still some potential to be made, as always. And yeah, will be interesting to see what you can get. The ARM-based stuff, Microsoft has been, it's like sneakishly investing in it, I would like to say. I mean, for one thing, they have, I think the main incentive that you have is, as a cloud provider, ARM just uses a lot less power. So you save money, or you can host more applications on the same real estate, which is good for business. And so .NET has now been running quite well on ARM-based processors for a while now. And Windows, I'm using it on my Mac virtualized. It runs well. Visual Studio has been ported over to ARM-based operations, which runs well. I think one of the last holdouts is SQL Server, which is not being brought over to ARM-based platforms. They're like sub-derivates of SQL Server that have, I think, the SQL engine, but not all the reporting tools baked into it. So, yeah, that's maybe something. I don't know. I'm just babbling at this point. But, yeah, large language models, sessions on that, who would have guessed? The thing powering this new AI generation, and RAGs also seem to be some of the things. The RAGs are a way how you can improve the way how large language models use data, so you can provide it with a subset of truth on your domain, and then the LLM, the ChatGPT, what you're using, whatever, would then be able to give more accurate answers without making up a bunch of stuff, which, depending on which field you're working in, I guess most, you don't really like to get some fantasy answers, which are not true.
Unless you're writing a D&D campaign or something like that.
Yeah, true. I mean, true.
Fantasy works. But yeah. You said 21st, right? Yeah. So that's next weekish.
Yeah.
Giving away when we're recording this. But yeah. I'll probably watch the ones that are on demand watchable. But I'm not sure if I'll make all the fairly late timed ones that might be of interest.
Yeah, one you can check out already today, Stephen, by the way, is GitHub Copilot Workspace. So while not directly from Microsoft, I mean, GitHub is kind of apart from Microsoft.
No.
This is the latest incarnation of using Copilot. And I haven't dabbled with it personally, but looking at the high-level thing, it's like, yeah, some say you can now write code from your phone, which is not something I wanted to do, but who knows? Maybe haven't found yet the spirit for it.
Can't say that's something I aspired to do ever. But speaking of Aspire, are there Aspire sessions? Because that's also a very hot and happening topic.
Must be. Don't Aspire, yeah. I've been dabbling a bit with it. Nothing too serious yet, but there is Demystify Cloud Native Development with .NET Aspire, brought to you by Damien Edwards and David Fowler. So that should be a fun session. Always a fun time watching them work. And then there's another one, .NET Aspire Development on Any OS with Visual Studio Family by Wendy Brading and Brady Gaster. Those should be fun to watch. Yeah. and they will be recorded because one of them is 11:15 at night, which is way past my bedtime, and the other one is at 10 p.m, which is just about my bedtime. So
it's way past my bedtime. Yeah.
What can I say? I'm a creature of habit, and so yeah, save them to backpack.
But I'm not blaming you.
But yeah, .NET Aspire. So that's so the gist of it is basically you can, it's like Docker Compose, like at a very very high level. It's not Docker Compose though, so you can have like all your different services, and also like if you need like some infrastructure stuff like a database or a Redis cache or something like that, you can write it up in C#, and then .NET Aspire will then allow you to boot all those services up. So it makes it a lot easier for development. You get like again that F5 experience a bit back, because as soon as you got like multiple things going on, it's always like when someone new comes to the team, it's like, well, listen, we'll now set your machine up for 2 days, and you will come every 50 minutes running with a new question that you have, and someone will go like, oh, interesting, we should really fix that in our documentation. You can solve that problem if you use Docker or Docker Compose, and .NET Aspire is just like a C# friendly way, so you don't have to fumble around in some YAML files. You can do it all in C#. Plus, you get some cool additions on top of it. So you get like some logging and some tracing already built in, which is nice. So that really is, it usually just is some grunt work you have to do if you're doing it on your own, and it's like kind of baked in into Aspire. Plus, if you want to later on deploy your application to the cloud, really easy to be done. So that is, I think, one of the main like motivations from Microsoft behind Aspire, is to make it a lot easier to have a lot of systems running and then pushing it up to the cloud. And for that, you need to have some kind of orchestration, like some kind of, I need these few services, I need these infrastructure things. And with .NET Aspire, this should become a lot easier. Plus, a lot of the overhead work that just comes when you have multiple services that communicate with each other, they try to make this easier for .NET, especially ASP.NET developers to go along. It's not yet public, I think, right now. This is in beta mode. So who knows? Maybe it will drop the beta.
I've seen some samples of it. It looks pretty cool, especially that you don't really, like, you're spinning up all these different kinds of services, like a Redis cache or a database or whatever, and you're not shipping around all sorts of query strings and stuff like that. It's just you're tying these services together, and all of that underlying stuff is being handled for you, which is pretty cool. And yeah, I was told by a professional, James Montemagno, so it must be a professional.
Yeah, that sounds professional.
If you want to deploy it, you just right-click publish.
Oh, that's becoming a thing again. Huh?
It apparently it was a bad thing at some point. I'd never really experienced it like that.
I think it still is, Stephen.
It is? Okay. Well, I've never experienced it like that.
I think the main problem with, I mean, right-click publish is a super easy way to do it. Don't get me wrong. And I understand why people really like the approach. One of the problems I often see with this is if you right-click publish, you usually don't have a continuous integration, continuous deployment environment that is running on the background. And I think if you don't have that, that can lead to so many headaches along the way. So people will check stuff in that break, or you publish but you didn't run all the unit tests, and now one test is failing and you forgot. It's just like you set yourself up to do, again, a lot more manual checking, and then right-click publish. And if you got that like set up on a build environment, it can be GitHub Actions, or it can be an Azure DevOps, or on your favorite whatever you use as your build server. These days, they're pretty much all the same, I think, when it comes to build servers. Probably not. Some have got this really cool new feature that the other one hasn't got. I know. You choose your own favorite poison. But if you don't have that in place, or if you have that in place, I must say, you just get like more peace of mind, in my opinion. And so that's why I understand when people go like, oh, right click publish, this is not what you want. And others go like, yeah, but it's so easy. And you go like, yeah, until it hits you in the face.
Which inevitably it will.
Yeah, which, I mean, especially like if you're me, I don't know, maybe other people out there, they're just like so good and organized. I just always tend to forget stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine. Myself as well, just, yeah. I typically, for like these little pet projects, I might actually right-click publish because I'm, once again, either too lazy or too time-constrained to set up a decent pipeline to build all this stuff. Because pipelines don't even...
Like, yeah. I mean, if you got a template... It might work. So it's like the job that I'm currently working at, the stuff that we build is the same technology stack over and over again. So when we have a new service that we think like it's time to make a new service, like we have the actual technical and business requirements to do that, it's a lot less hassle because you just say like, yeah, I need to build this and I'll use that YAML script that I've already used on those five other services and it will just work. And that's like a huge time saver. But if you are like a indie dev or a lot of your projects are hugely different because you're trying out new things, well, yeah, that's pain. Because writing these things or like setting it up, it usually always takes more time than you would originally think. I mean, whenever someone goes like, yeah, we just have to change this one little thing in the build pipeline, it will be like 2 hours. You go like, yep, call me in 2 days. And I'm not always right. But sometimes I'm right.
If the commit and build history for your pipeline doesn't at least involve 10 commits that failed the pipeline at the start, then you're a better person than I am, basically. It's like, I hate it.
Yeah, it's a rite of passage, people. It's a rite of passage. So, and that's why right-click publish will never die, because sometimes you just don't care. You just have to get it out, get it in front of whoever, and it's so much easier. I mean, if you think about it, if every demo you would make during a presentation, you would always do it like the right way. I mean, yeah. Who wants to watch a session where people check in the YAML file for the 20th time with please work now? It's just
and then sit there and wait until all the VMs spin up again and take 15 minutes of your time to get to the step that's failing.
Yeah, and it's always like one of the steps right at the end, right? It's like it's never like the first two steps that you just run into a few seconds in. No, it's always like, yeah, now you wait until the builders run through and then we'll see if. Oh god,
maybe.
Yeah. But yeah, good maybe, stuff. But that maybe one of these co-pilot things that will be presented will solve all these problems for us. Who knows? Yeah,
I would be very happy to use it.
I'm on board. I'm totally on board for that. Yeah, but generally speaking, I mean, during build, we'll get a sneak peek. Another one that we'll get is C#13, so the next incarnation of C#. I will have to check out what is going on there, but it's always interesting to see. What could go along. And another one that should be quite interesting is a highly technical talk with Hanselman and Taub. So Stephen Taub and Scott Hanselman. They say it's zero slides, just code. That could be an interesting watch. Yeah.
That is indeed curious, I suppose.
Yeah. It's just like, I remember like many, many years ago, Scott Hanselman, he once made a talk about T4 templates. I don't know if you ever used them. They're like for transforming stuff code according to templates. That's the name says, T4, transform templates probably. And he just has like this way of bringing over dry information in a way that makes you laugh. And so it's it was a very good talk, and it was T4 templates. Just want to say. Another thing that's interesting I find is there is actually a talk by taking ReSharper to the next level with JetBrains AI Assistant. So ReSharper is the plugin for Visual Studio by JetBrains. They also make an IDE. They don't talk about the IDE here, but yeah.
We don't talk about the IDE, Mark.
No, we don't. And there also seems to be a session how you can integrate Blazor into WinForms. So that just, for me, shows that WinForms will probably live on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
Never going anywhere.
So completely out of the build things. How's your TV watching going on these days? Because I'm lagging behind. I don't know if you're an avid series watcher of anything, but like there's this Fallout series out on, I think it's Amazon. I don't even know which of all of these services it's on, to be honest. I think it's Amazon. I need to watch it. But time.
Yeah, it's I got like a so I've actually never had Amazon Prime Video, so I have never watched any series on there. But generally speaking, it's like I'm still on Netflix, and I sometimes go to Apple TV. I've already had been dabbling with some other things, but it's just like there's so many streaming things. There's so much really great content coming out, like literally every month, and I just have got no chance. I thought like once I would be done with Netflix, I could then swap over again to watch some. I think I still got like a few shows I want to watch on Apple TV. It's just like you're a hamster in a wheel. So I probably will just give up at some point. But there's one of my favorite shows I watched during the flight to the MVP summit was Drive to Survive. I really like that one. There's some other seasons or series that will be coming out. I just watched The Diplomat lately on Netflix. That was a cool show. It's like a play in London, and it's like got these conspiracy things and everything. And
yeah. Fancy. Yeah, I'm seriously just lagging behind on everything.
There are other things in life, right?
This is very true. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I would be on top of all those other things. Behind there too, but yeah.
Managing those just as well.
Yeah, I just thought about this today. When I was young, you always heard all the people talking about, oh, it's spring again, now I have to go into the garden, do gardening stuff. And you always are like, yeah, no. I'm old now because I got now gardening stuff to do. So
don't even get me started. Like we've been gone for a week. The grass is like up to my knees at this point, and I wanted to mow it yesterday. But by the time I got home from work, it started to rain. When it was sunny all day, I got home, rain, and then today I got home, rain. So it's going to be up to my armpits by the time I get around to mowing.
Yeah, you'll need a machete to make the first trim.
Hear us here with our adult problems.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe there will be a co-pilot presented next week that will... probably not. You could have a lawnmower robot. I gave up on mine. It's the cable installation was just too much hassle to do. And then I nearly got it working, and then I noticed that one of the connection wires is not connected, and that's like somewhere beneath, like I don't know where. Oh, I didn't do it. I let the gardener do it. So yeah, but that's not working. And I thought I'll dig it up, and then my wife said, "Hey, you know what? I want to plant new flowers over there, so we can't use it anyway." And I just go like, "Okay, I'll just give it up. That's it. I'll just cut it by hand again. It's not a lot. I mean, you're done within 15 to 20 minutes. So
it's not even a full
podcast. But yeah. One day. And on that gardening nightmare, we shall end the show. Looking forward to build next week. And then we'll see. I think there will be one or two things we can talk about in the next episode. More detail about build. Highlight some of our favorite episodes. Take care. See you next time. We've been your hosts, Mark Alibone.
And Stephen Davison.
Be sure to find us on your favorite socials and say give us a hi. Until next time.